we're so focused in growth you in this growth retreat around how do I grow? How do I find more people? How do I build my better website? How do I create these online funnels? What's my top of funnel, middle of funnel, bottom of funnel? All of these different components of the marketing plan. But I think today's session, my intention and what I want to, my definition of success for all of you here is to do one of two things. Reaffirm that you're crystal clear on your unique value proposition. Why would someone choose to work with you? And reaffirm that for yourself if you do feel pretty clear about that. And number two, or number two, if you're struggling with that or you're not really sure when I ask you the question, why would someone choose to work with you? If you don't know how to answer this, we're going to spend some time going through this worksheet. So this is going to be much more of a working session and a Q&A dialogue than it is going to be me just up here talking esoterically and philosophically about what a unique value proposition is, et cetera, et cetera. So I do want this to be a working session. We're going to take some time in between. I'll share some of my thoughts and philosophies on how we do things in our firm, give you some examples of how we position, promote and position ourselves in the optometry space. Again, if you've heard me say it once, you've heard me say it a thousand times. Everything that we're talking about here at Limitless in Growth is exponentially easier when you're crystal clear of who you do your best work with. The goal in this conversation is it's one thing to know how you do, who you do your best work, but how do you effectively and efficiently communicate that to someone in the fraction of a second that you have either online, how you build that unique value proposition online so it lives evergreen on your website, or in the situation where someone asks you what. Again, maybe they're not asking you directly this, why should I work with you as opposed to someone else? But it's that question of what do you do? How do you do it for clients? What's the value in working with you? And so we're going to talk through that here today. And so again, my goal is that you have that worksheet, you have that that deliverable, if you will, at the end of this. Because again, we know that any financial website that has a pair of Adirondack chairs or a house or a compass or two older couples walking on a beach holding hands, like, oh my gosh, like gag me now. Because yes, it might make you feel good to see that, but it still doesn't answer the question of why should I choose you? Why should I work with you? What problem can you solve that I have right now? Or even better, can you communicate a problem that I might have that I didn't know that I had, right? That's what it's, you know, Steve Jobs is famous for saying, no one wanted the iPhone. But we understood what people, we understood how to go where the puck was going, to quote Wayne Gretzky, than to go where it is right now. Same with Harrison Ford. Jeez, Henry Ford. Can't believe I just made that mistake. Wow. Can you edit that out? Can I just like snap my fingers and pretend like that didn't happen? Harrison Ford, wow.
It was right before, so.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But what did Ford say? If I'd ask people what they wanted, they'd just say a faster horse. And so this idea here, maybe not directly related, but can you communicate? Can you create a value proposition that communicates to someone, oh, I never thought of that. Do I have that problem? Like, oh, that's a unique problem. And so that's part of what we're trying to communicate here. My big pet peeves, and Taylor's not in here, so I can throw him under the bus. He has this on his website and it works for him. That's great. I don't think as we continue, we as a profession continue to evolve, continue to be more transparent. There's this shift from the wirehouse into the independent space, from independent into RIA, right? We know that firms are growing. I don't believe, and I think all of us in the room would agree, that fee only, fiduciary, best interest, heck, best interest isn't a differentiator because of the best interest rule, right? Like all a client hears is that want, they just don't know how to differentiate. So don't believe that these are a differentiator. They are to an extent, but certainly don't hang your hat on that. That's not going to be what some of the brands we know that we've talked about. Limitless, this little guy right here, Roger Whitney, is an awesome case study in what it means to build a brand in the space. Roger is the founder of the Rock Retirement Club. I know not to take a left turn into the woods too far here, but there's a lot of, and I'm partly responsible for this because I've been pretty outspoken about it. There is a shift, or not a shift, but this community aspect of can I grow a community? Can I grow a one-to-many offering? Can I somehow democratize financial advice? Roger, from a branding standpoint, the Retirement Dancer Man, and then the Retirement Rocks Club community that he has started, has been and has taken on almost a bigger role in his life than his actual advisory firm. But again, what he's solving for, he's very, very crystal clear on what he's delivering to the people that want to be a member of the Rocks Retirement Club. They're do-it-yourself investors that are looking for a safe space to learn about how to rock retirement. And if you go to just Google retirement rocks, rock your retirement, I believe it's rockyourretirement.com, you can get a feel for how his website is laid out, how that community is built, and the brand messaging, the unique value proposition that he has to that audience. That audience is not going to be primarily the people that you're going to hire, that are going to hire you or him as an advisor. But again, it speaks to his brand. So, Josh, let me pick on you first because you're front and center.
Yes.
How would you communicate your value proposition right now? What's your unique value proposition? If someone were to ask, why would I work with Josh? How would you answer your unique value proposition? And quick housekeeping as we interact here, there are mics on everybody's table. Certainly don't want to leave our virtual folks on an island there. So how do you think about your unique value proposition right now?
I help owners of privately held businesses find their 3.0.
So that they can?
I'm working on that part.
Okay. We're all friends here, right?
This is an idea that has really started to come together since this time yesterday.
Good. Oh, you mean you don't have it figured out yet? I expected more from you.
I am, in fact, not perfect.
You level up, dude. It's pretty cool up here. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
And that's why I love you.
The key phrase there, I think, that's really important, and it resonated with me as well as I went through this exercise a couple years ago, is I help people to blank, 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 so that they, right? We're connecting what we do and the problem that we solve with something that they can feel. And this goes back to something that we've talked about as well, the differences between features and benefits. For me, my biggest challenge when I was going through this process, and even to this day, just last week or 2 weeks ago, when I was rolling out and kind of framing out the 2020 Money community and what that's mean, what is my unique value proposition? Why would someone join this community that I'm launching for the followers and for the listeners of 2020 Money? I started thinking of it in all the features that they're going to have. They're going to have access to these checklists and these courses and this. And it's like, yeah, but how does it make them feel? What's the result, right? Our friend, I've said it before, and Carl has said it over and over again, people don't care about our solutions. They care about their problems. And so as you start thinking about what is the unique value proposition, the first thing that we're doing, again, we've talked about it in Limitless, I hear you, I see you, I can help you. And so as you're crafting the message here, I help, very, very clear on the avatar, on the audience that you're serving. I help blank to blank, blank, and blank so that they can, or so that they feel secure in their retirement. Like for ours, we help optometric private practice owners around the country. Keyword there was something that we talked about in the website today about kind of creating a geographic agnostic. I make sure that I put nationwide in that because I want every optometrist to know, just because we're in Indiana, I'm not gonna say we help optometrists in over 30 states. No, we help optometric private practice owners nationwide proactively manage cash flow, reduce taxes, and invest prudently so they can live their best life on purpose. Like that's my goal, is that at the end of this session, you have a very good working rough draft or a polished draft of what you've already worked on, so that you can say that just like you can say your name, so that practice owners and optometrists, they know at the end of that sentence, they either fit that mold or they don't. Now, if they are an optometric private practice owner and they're not concerned with those top three things, okay, maybe they're not in alignment. Where those three things came from for me though, is being observational about who were the top clients that we had in our firm that we enjoyed working with, and they were very grateful and appreciated our process and what we went through. And it was a matter of doing that case study of saying kind of the before, during, and after. What was the primary concern? What was the chief complaint? Kind of play the medical analogy there. What was their chief complaint? What was the pain point that caused them initially to reach out? What problem were they looking to have solved? Interestingly enough, what blew my mind is I was amazed at how many private practice owners didn't really understand how to take distributions out of an S corporation. and how taxes play into that, and the fact that you don't have to pay Medicare taxes and Social Security taxes, and that the ratio of wages to distributions affect your Social Security benefit, and that no, you're actually opening yourself up to potential audit risk if you make $30,000 in salary but take $350,000 in distributions. You might want to balance that. But again, there can be a disconnect. One of the problems that I see advisors have is they think just because this is common sense for me, that it's common sense for my prospects. And the best way to learn about that is to, again, just survey the clients. That's why the top exercise on our sheet is who are our ideal clients. List the top 5 to 10 characteristics. I would encourage you to think about, assuming that you have a group of clients that are in your ideal niche that fit that avatar, think back to what were the top 3 to 5 core concerns, core problems that you helped them solve. Why did they choose to work with you? Or two, why did they choose to seek you out? What was the problem that you had that you helped solve? So let's take about 3 minutes or so to write down those questions or write down some of those answers. And certainly if you have questions, let me know, but let's just kind of get some, let's start working from the top down on the sheet. Jeopardy music. Yes.
When can I retire? How is that a characteristic? That's not what you're talking about.
I think of characteristic as what is a characteristic of why they chose to reach out. I mean, you could, I guess I'm defining characteristic a little bit differently. I'm thinking of the characteristic as what is the problem that they're looking to have solved. You're thinking of it, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, in the characteristic is I want a client that's a delegator. I'm looking for someone that's open to receiving advice. That it's a quality that you'd want to have in a client. But as we're thinking about how do we craft and communicate our unique value proposition of what differentiates us from our clients or from our competitors, I'm thinking of that more through the filter of how can they know that I can solve their problem? They don't understand how to get cash out of their business. They're complaining that they pay too much in taxes. They're wanting to figure out how to use the cash in their business. You know, how much cash should I keep in the business? Where should I invest in the business? How do I prioritize investing in the practice versus versus investing in their 401k or their Roth IRAs? Should I move from a simple IRA to a 401k? When should I make that transition? Do I have too much in broker? Do I have too much in bonds? Like I talk to practice owners or optometrists. We do the practice as their bond position. Because when you think of an optometry practice, it's a really, really consistent cash flow stream. Once you have an established practice, you just pull in the proverbial slot machine. And so for them, it has a very nominal, an established practice is a 3 to 5% growth trajectory. Distributions of 20 to 25% of total production. Looks, smells, and feels like a bond. And so we have that conversation of saying, you know what, the practice essentially is the fixed income portion of your portfolio. And so we kind of do a barbell approach to their equity to their investment portfolio. No one else is talking to them about that. So what unique messaging for the people that you do your best work with? So we help reduce concentrated stock positions. Yeah. Yeah, but risk is, do people really understand risk? Once you explain.
Once you live through it.
So we need something that will attract people.
Correct.
So what if they don't know what to do?
Well, I mean, the first step is they have to know that they have a problem, right? If they don't know that they have a problem, then they don't.
Okay, right. So,
I mean, never
all the mics are on, correct?
Yes.
All the mics are on? The table mics? Okay, 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 good deal.
Okay, no, now it's on.
Now it's on.
Yeah, so the question, because, you know, you want people with concentrated stock positions, right? Some of the people with concentrated stock positions are not going to come to us because they're like, oh my gosh, I have all of this Amazon stock. It's going to be great. Why? Yeah, they're not looking for us. So who are the people that are looking for us? It's the people that are looking to divest themselves of their concentrated stock positions. And so the question is, why would they want to? What's going on in their head? Either, number one, they're like, oh, I want to try and get out before things go bad because I think things are going bad, or things have just gone bad and that's, you said they've lived through it. They've just lived through it. And they're like, oh, how am I going to get rid of the rest? Or alternatively, they're looking to retire. The bomb has managed not to go off yet, but now they've got millions and millions of dollars in concentrated stock and they want to unload themselves of that in a way that minimizes their taxes, which has been my position.
Go ahead.
And so probably something along those lines of minimize the taxes or optimize between minimizing taxes on one side and diversifying yourself out, maybe building an income stream, whatever it is that you find your clients are thinking about it in terms of. I guess that would be one place to start. You probably get it.
If you want to check out an advisor that's done a pretty good job of doing this, check out Meg Bartelt, Flow Financial. Meg. Yep. Meg, BART ELT, I think, Flow Financial. She works with a lot of women in tech, and therefore a decent amount of their compensation structure. Another guy that you can check out, friend of mine, Mike Policar, out in Washington, from a target market standpoint. Mike and I were working through some things a couple years ago, and I believe he's still on this trajectory, but at that time, his target market was helping Costco executives where more than 50% of their compensation comes from their executive stock plan from the stock plan. So he was targeted in saying, well, a lot of people in Costco get options or get stock as part of their comp, but I only really want to focus with people where over 50% of their comp comes from executive stock, from executive stock plan. So his role is trying to, how do I help de-risk the inconsistency in income? Because that stock plan, the vesting schedule and how it all works, and RSUs, when they vest, now there's tax implications on the RSU. Do I sell it? My favorite question is, well, if I gave you $10,000, would you go buy your company's stock? No, then sell the stock. I mean, just some of these different questions, like that's some of the initial messaging that I would start trying to put down on paper. I don't know if that helps, but we're trying to identify the problems that people have. And again, that's where I'm saying problems equal the characteristics, as it's illustrated in the sheet. Does that make sense? Okay. Like I said, this gets easier if the more narrow your niche market is. I help people with money. Well, that's... Yeah, exactly, right? Eli, do you have a question? And that can be part of the messaging of showcasing them what, you know, where are their blind spots. They don't. That's a good point. Optimizing your income through your executive stock option plan or through your executive stock option strategies.
Yeah.
Optimizing.
But if we're trying to not solve or not tell them how smart we are, but also solve their problem that they may not know that they have, how do we communicate that we can solve the problem that they don't know that they had without them being like...
Yes. He's got the mic. Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Sorry about that. If it doesn't work, plug it in. If that doesn't work, turn it on.
Nice.
Okay. So I'll try to repeat the question here. if we're trying to solve a problem, trying to solve a prospect's problem, but they don't know that they have the problem. So we're identifying the problem that they don't know that they have. How can we craft that both problem and solution quickly in a way that they don't feel dumb or stupid that, geez, I didn't even know that I had that problem?
One, so the clarifying question that I would have to that is, where are we trying to solve that? Are we solving for that in the, like, is this a question that's coming up in the prospecting process? Is this on the website? Is this
be more on the website and just
case studies are a great way.
Yeah.
Okay. Case studies. I was talking at lunch with I don't think Mike's here, about we're redoing our website right now to create case studies on the website that are going to show three avatars of optometric practice owners that we work with. And the surgical needle that we have to thread here is be concise and clear enough in the before, during, and after, right? This client came to us because of this problem. This is how we solved it, and here's the result. Here's the feeling. Here's the execution of the plan, and do that in a concise enough way to communicate that to three avatars, and do it broad enough so that as ODs come to the website, that net that Michael talked about yesterday, right? The net is still big enough, but yet people can say, "Oh, that's me. That's my problem that I have. I'm a practice owner. I bought my practice 5 years ago. The cash flow is now consistent enough where the free cash flow after debt service means that I don't know what to do with the excess cash and I don't know how to get it out of my practice. I want to do these things at home. I've got a patio that I want to do. I want to buy this rental property. Can I do that? Should I do that? Should I reinvest it back into the practice?" Like, as I just regurgitate all that right now, my packaging process or my packaging homework in front of me is, how do I build that into an above the fold or into some part on the website that someone can say, "Oh yeah, I have those exact problems as well." Case studies are a really good way to try and communicate that. That's why, again, we're building that on our website. If you go to Taylor's website, he has his three avatars of who he does his work, of who he does his ideal work with, his ideal client. That's a great way to do it. Does that help? Okay. All right. Are we good? Any other questions before we kind of move on here? So, and candidly, when I'm looking at this deck and knowing where I want to take conversation, I'm going to go off the rails a little bit here. I'll touch on this, but I do really want to make sure that we get through that in the time that we have, that you leave with that unique or with that good messaging on how you communicate your value and what your value prop is to your client. One of the things that we do here, again, from a differentiating standpoint, is the type of advice that we give. Like I said, I didn't realize just how basic the advice was, but how impactful it was to communicate how to take distributions out of an S corporation. It's something called unconscious competence, right? That level of mastery that we, one of the phrases I was talking with Michelle last night at dinner, one of the observations that I've had in the work in the niche that we've built has been kind of this interesting paradox of the amount of extra knowledge that I have about optometry isn't a whole lot more than probably everybody in this room has, but it's the right amount. It's just the right amount packaged the right way that makes all the difference to the world to them, right? An S-corp is an S-corp is an S-corp. If any of you work with the business owners in here, there's nothing different about that. But the question is, how much cash should they leave in their business? That is a different question. It would take all of you in a room here, I don't know, a half hour to read some of my articles that I've written on it, listen to a couple of podcasts, read some practice management chapters, and come up with some pretty good recommendations that an optometric practice should keep about 2 months of operating expenses in the minus cost of goods in the bank account. The fact that I can give that recommendation and that's a pain point for them of how much cash should I keep in the business and how do I harvest it out, that's what matters to them. And because we've got kind of our built into some of the deliverables here, but what we did here is created based off of that question, based off a lot of the feedback that we were getting from ODs in how do I understand whether I can afford to buy this practice? How do I understand how much debt I can take on in the business before it starts hurting the cash flow in my business, before it starts inhibiting my ability to live the best life on purpose, before I have so much debt in the practice that I can't take that I can't take the distributions that I need to enjoy life on the home front. Where's that balance? Where's that? So we built some spreadsheets. John built some spreadsheets because I'm still going down in the record books as being the most Excel illiterate advisor out there, and I'm proud of that accolade. So the idea here is, from a deliverable standpoint, again, I know a little bit of a left turn off of what we've been talking about thus far, but the connection of, as you're communicating verbally on the website about who you do your best work with, how do you actually show up and deliver that? The idea of creating, whether it's your one-page plan or in this case, some deliverables that we send out to them that gives them that information, that's the next, that's again, a little bit further down a rabbit hole here, but that's just some of the next level build outs that you can have. Our 3 points that we solve for ODs, again, communicating with them that one of the biggest questions that they have is, how much should I invest back into my practice? When should I invest back into my practice? And so we prioritize it, invest back into the business until we're solving for an income goal, et cetera. So again, I'm vacillating back and forth here on where we want to go. But when you think of the problems that you've identified on that top sheet, now I think what I'd like to do is either have some discussions about it or take some time to work on it to essentially answer that question from here, like that, from here, here's the before, here are the problems that they have, what are the solutions and benefits, right? Back to what I said earlier, we talk in here are all the benefits. Oh, you get access to e-money and you get access to Orion, look at all these pretty reports and blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, that's not necessarily what they care about. What are the solutions that we're offering? What are the benefits? Excuse me, those are the features that we talk about versus what are the benefits that they experience? So to use the stock option example, the problem that they have is optimizing my stock plan, optimizing my executive comp plan. What's the benefit in doing that? That's one example that to think through of, what's the benefit to the end user? What's the benefit to the client? Put yourself in a client situation. What's the feeling that they're going to have as a result of you taking them through this process? And again, what's that before after state? I go from confused to confident. We help optometric practice owners go from a state of being confused and overwhelmed to clear and confident in their business. What's the problem? What's the transfer? What are the benefits? What's the before and after? Let's take another couple minutes here. Again, we can certainly turn this into a dialogue and wordsmith this together.
And if I may make something that hopefully is useful to other people here, as I'm thinking about this and trying to answer your questions, I'm realizing that as part of my prospecting process, as part of my discovery call process, I ask potential clients, what is it that you're looking to get and why? Like, what are the good scenarios you're hoping to get to? And what are the bad scenarios you're hoping to avoid? And they are telling me the from here and to here in that. Like, they are literally giving me the answer to the question. Now, I don't want to solve for everybody's from here to here, but I can find my best clients. I can go back and look at my discovery notes and go, oh, that was there. There's a pattern here. I've got a whole bunch of clients that have the same pain points because they want to get from wherever to wherever. And there they have. They have done my work for me. Thank you, clients.
So, do you have a discovery template where you're asking the same questions?
Yes. Absolutely.
Does everybody here have a clear agenda, a clear question set that they go through with every single prospect? Ooh, more homework. Can I ask why? All right. That's all right. What's that other? Okay. I think it's, so Sarah's question online, by clear. Yes, I wing it.
So.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that I don't get all of the salient points. It's just that I will often know about it differently based upon.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Thank you. All I will go about it differently based upon the tone of the call.
Sure.
And what I then begin to identify as specific pain points for that particular individual, and then I just kind of weave around.
And that's the art of the relationship, right? That's the art of the conversation that so many of us in here are really good at doing, is gauging and feeling the atmosphere and the tone of the call and who that person is. I think it's really important that an advisor have a set of 3 to 4 questions that you want to hit on in every conversation, regardless of where it goes. Unless it's one of those conversations where exit stage left as quickly as possible because this just isn't a good fit and you want to give their and your time back. But if you're still feeling your way through that, I think having a really good skeleton or a really good kind of center line of here are 3 or 4 key questions that I want to ask. One of those, we kick off the conversation. So this is from a value standpoint and our unique, and to the point of the exercise that we're doing here, I want them to tell me, what is the biggest financial concern you're looking to have solved right now? That's the intake form question. When they schedule a triage call, that's a question that they have to answer in order to book the appointment. So I'll lead into the triage call. We do the pleasantries, blah, blah, blah. I set the expectation of how I define success in this call. Kara, as a result of our conversation, the only thing that I want to make sure that you have clarity on is what's going to be your next best step at the end of this conversation. If that's continuing through our process, great. We'll talk about what that's going to be. If we find out that we're not the best fit for what you're looking for the problem that you're looking to have solved, I want you to leave with that next conversation to have. So that's my definition of success. Is that okay with you? Great. Sounds good. So on your intake form, you mentioned that your biggest financial concern that you're looking to have solved right now is, and I almost, unless sometimes they'll write a paragraph, I'll summarize it there, but tell me a little bit more about that. And then from there, the conversation will start meandering, right? But at the end of the day, I will always ask, what is your experience in working with a financial professional? Right? Are you looking to hire an advisor, or are you just determining whether or not you need one? That can also kind of help some of the tire kickers to people like, I don't really know if I need one, but no, or no, I'm definitely shopping for an advisor right now. We're interviewing you and Natalie down in Atlanta, which is usually who I'm up against. She's the other OD advisor. We're good friends. It's fine. It's Blue Ocean. there's 36,000 optometrists in there. There's 2 of us. And then the classic Dan Sullivan question, fast forward 12 months from now, how do you define success in this relationship? I love that question from Dan. Full credit to Dan. I know it's his. Which one? The Dan. Yeah. So the statement was, you should ask that Dan Sullivan question every single time, right? Managing expectations.
Okay. From Terry online, Adam, can you go through your "I do my best work with" statement again?
Yes. So we do our best work with optometric private practice owners nationwide who are looking to solve. Or let me phrase it this way, because when you say it that way. We do our best work with optometric private practice owners nationwide to help them proactively manage cash flow, reduce taxes, and invest prudently so they can live their best life on purpose. And that on purpose point is kind of a play on words, right? You can say, or not really a play on words, but you can define that in 2 different ways. On purpose as in intentional, or on purpose as back to kind of, and maybe this is semantics here, but right, Carl's whole statement of financial intent, statement of financial purpose, aligning action with intention. That's why we've chosen to phrase it that way, to help you live your best life on purpose. It's in alignment with what's on our website, on the hero spot on our website. So that brand, I'm trying to be on point with the brand at every stage of the journey. And that's what makes our firm unique. Yeah, I am much more touchy-feely than what Taylor is. John as well, as an advisor, really embrace that on purpose, on intention, and that translates into the practice management work that we do with our business owners as well, with our clients. We tell clients, and again, managing and setting expectations, I know I'm deviating here a little bit, but we tell them, just to draw that line in the sand, if you're hiring us to analyze your frame board pricing, that's not us. If you're hiring us because you're not happy with your buying group, not us. We can facilitate and we can fix. But we're not going to, those are examples of where we will facilitate an introduction to someone else. The benefit to you, Dan, is that you don't have to worry about spending your time to find the resource, because we've got everybody in our back pocket. So you don't have to spend that time worrying. But on the fixing side, once it hits a balance sheet, statement of cash flow, or income statement, now you're in our sandbox. And so our planning process, right, back to what we, how we organize this. And this is, again, I'm sharing my example in hopes that it inspires some correlation to your clients, if you think through your clients. So our goal, integrated income planning cycle, is what is the dollar amount needed? Financial planning 101, right? Time, value, money. How much money do you need to save to live your life on purpose, enjoy life today, saving for tomorrow, right? All the work that we do here for planning. But now the unique value proposition is, with that number, how do we build a profit-first business? And so we have an exercise that will take clients. This is how much we've determined that our practice needs to produce. We need to make $275,000 out of our practice. Whether it's that's how much we need to harvest in cash flow. That's what the conduit of cash flow needs to be for that practice. Great. What are your margins? And then you just walk up the income statement, up the profit loss statement. Instead of starting with gross revenue, we figure out what is the gross revenue that it needs to produce in order to net that cash flow. No one's ever talked to them about that before. Everybody always talks about gross revenue, build $1 million practice, build $1 million practice. I don't care what you make, I care what you keep. And so that's, again, that messaging, it comes with practice, and it just comes with the at-bats and the reps with your clients. And that's why I keep coming back. If you're struggling with some of these things and you're trying to figure that out, go back to your clients. Go back to assuming that you have an idea of who you do your best work with and that you already have a couple of clients in your sandbox. That's who you want to replicate. Go back and inventory them. Think through the plan. Analyze what was the before, what was the after. What was the feeling? What was the effect of going through that process? Because like associates with like. And if you find, and then now I think of the marketing, how did you find them? What was the best way in which you attracted them? Great, go fish in that pond. Again, not to deviate too much here. Other questions? I don't think we had much yet. There's not a whole lot of, there's not a, saved. Crisis averted, right? All right.
Adam, I've got a question.
Yeah, there we go.
You'd indicated earlier that, you know, fee only, best interest, all of those are basically table stakes at this point. I'm paraphrasing. A question I have is, recognizing that most everybody in this room has higher level of either credentials or experience than the average financial advisor out there, and that we are going head to head with some of them, and that our clients, if they have a medical issue, they're not going to just their regular doctor. They want to go see the specialist.
Yeah.
They want to see the specialist, and
yeah,
they want to not just see a specialist, they want to see the head of the department.
Sure.
How much can we highlight that we're kind of best in class here, and that we collectively have the credentials, or we are, you know, at the upper echelon and not just, you know, are you looking to hire, you mentioned something, or term advisor. I don't want to put myself in the camp of a financial advisor. I want to put myself in the camp of CFP, CPWA. Like, I'm already
sure
at the, you know, the top 10%. And I just am curious as to how you would respond to trying to position it of in that way, recognizing that, you know, everybody in this room is in the top 10%.
So that is something that we communicate in, we've scaled that in the in our acuity confirmation schedules, or in the acuity email confirmations that get sent out as part of the prospect process. I forget which line it is, but it basically goes through and says, I think it's before the one-page plan presentation, maybe it's a triage, I don't remember, but it basically lays out, here's who the firm is, we're excited to talk with you. Over the X numbers of years, we've helped optometrists in over 30 states do the proactively manage, like we're continuing to seed that level of expertise. The other thing that we do is, it gets sent, Kathy sends it out after she, so someone books a triage call, within 24 hours, Kathy does a proactive outbound phone call, and then she'll I'll do the triage call after that, assuming that they're wanting to go through, or that I tell Kathy, hey, this is a good fit, put them through the discovery process. The next email that she sends out includes basically an FAQ of questions that if they're interviewing other advisors, they should ask, and it's my answers to the question. And those questions are intentional in that it does showcase why we're different than any other advisor. One of the things that we hang our hat on is that what other advisors consider as world-class financial planning are bare bones table stakes for us. The difference between our firm and any other advisory firm in the country is that we know what questions to ask and solutions to consider that neither you nor your advisory team thought to ask, because we know the business of optometry so well. I've said that a few times. Right. So you're asking, do you have the credentials page as?
No, I'm calling. I have a.
On the bottom, push it in, you think? Oh, there we go.
There we go. Okay. I was just saying, it was from my Raymond James days. In my welcome packet, I have a team credentials page. Mm-hmm. That basically goes through what all the letters mean behind my name, right? So that people, because there's so many letters, I feel like now, right? That have the most of them, especially clients that aren't savvy in our industry, don't know what they mean. So
agreed.
I think that's helpful.
I think it's helpful only if it's relevant to you being able to answer their question, right? Credentials, I don't think really matter unless. Like, or maybe said differently, if they don't understand that you can solve their problem, you could have Kitsis alphabet soup after his name, and it's still not going to resonate with them, because they don't know whether AWMA is going to be able to, well, can I get, how do I, again, I'll go back to my distributions out of an S corporation. CFP doesn't teach that. I don't think they do. I mean, it talks about the taxation of S corp distributions, but it certainly doesn't illustrate the fact that, like, you'd be surprised. You mean I can just transfer from my business bank account to my personal bank? Yeah. I don't have to write a check for a paper trail? No. Like, credentials, letters, I still go back to how are you communicating that you can solve their problem? The credentials would be maybe after, just in the sense of building that brand equity and building that. Here's the trust that we have, but you have to establish that you're the solution to their problem before you lead with the credentials, before you lead with the letters. That's my personal thought. So, okay. Ethan.
Can you, down on the bottom of this page where it goes through the section of role, approach, and process, do you have your own personal example or examples of kind of what is that building towards, or, you know, the things that go into those pieces?
So the role for us serving as their trusted advisor is that, kind of back to what I said, we're going to proactively ask you the questions that you should be asking. We're going to start, we'll start with that idea of proactively asking them the questions. The approach is talking to them about our integrated income planning model and the service model that we have. One of the phrases that we use, which has really resonated with our clients, and this is why the traditional surge approach that we talk about in Limitless, we surge with an asterisk, in the sense, in the sense that we still do our, we call them cornerstone client reviews in the spring and in the fall, i.e. surge, but we also tell clients we know that life doesn't wait for our proactive outreach. So the best way that you can start a conversation with our firm is, hey, John, we're thinking about doing this. The worst way you can start a conversation with our firm is, hey, guess what we did? Like, and I joke about that, and we talk about that in the prospect process to manage and set expectations. We want you to think of us first, last, and always. And so that process, and that, like, to kind of connect the dots, and this isn't necessarily in the, I would consider this more seeding than messaging, and maybe I'm splitting hairs here, but it's managing the expectation of what creates a great client experience for them, and subconsciously, or not subconsciously, but therefore creating a really good client that we want to have. Like, and I learned this, I mean, we had one client that I'm almost embarrassed to admit this, sold a rental property in Florida and didn't tell us about it and thought that they could 1035 it, or excuse me, 1031. And this year they're going to have a $70,000 tax gain.
After they sold it.
And the admission from my standpoint that I'll own, and I feel just, it's one of those things where part of me is like, I can't push a rope. Ironically enough, this is a client that would, like, she would call the office for, like, for the most administratively mundane things. And then you don't call us with something like this. You just assume that you could do a 1035. I own that, and in that I didn't communicate effectively with her. We want you to think of us first, last, and always whenever you're making a decision that has dollars at stake. I didn't do a good job of that. So to this point of the role that I didn't communicate in this is, we want to be your trusted advisor that you think of first, last, and always. And the approach for that is the best way that you can start that conversation with us is, we're thinking about doing. Just want them to think about that. The worst way, and we joke about it, the worst way you can start is, hey, guess what we did? And the benefit here is that, again, I always want them to think of, even if it's something that we can't solve. How do I think about putting that in three lines? I don't know. I would use that. Yeah, okay. Yep. Microphone, please. Thank you.
As you're putting this together, there's ways to state this with fear. There's ways to state it positive. Do you have any, like, thoughts?
What was the first word that you used? Fear?
Fear.
Okay. I don't like fear.
You don't like fear.
I don't. I don't want to scare people.
All right.
I want to educate and inform and empower. My personal preference. On the same token, psychologically, people either move in two directions, towards pleasure or away from pain. We're much more likely to move away from pain. I think there's a difference between pain and fear. Like,
got it.
We help clients reduce taxes. I don't want them to be fearful of taxes, but paying taxes suck. So if I can help them reduce their tax bill, that's a benefit.
Gotcha.
Does that answer your question, or is that?
No, it does.
I just kind of jumped in before I even maybe let you finish your question. I was like, you had me on fear, and I'm like, let me just squash that fire real quick.
So I actually, in the course of this, it's like, yeah, working with divorced women, but I actually kind of upped my game with this too. I want to work with women who are thinking about divorce, whose husbands have complex businesses or stock options. And so I think the fear—
That sounds heavy.
Right?
Holy moly.
I only need 100 of those.
What's that?
I said, I only need 100 of them.
God bless you. What?
But
what was it? What was it?
I said you need less than 100.
You need less than 100.
I think the fear there is that they're not going to be able to find the assets, that they're going to be hidden, they're going to be manipulated, and so that's the concern I'm trying to address.
Right.
Helping bring clarity to family's financial picture, or I'm thinking of clarity and transparency. Those are the two immediate words that came to my mind.
Okay.
Of how can you weave those into the messaging? Because like you said, the hiding of assets, the underlying message there is, like the feeling that someone has, like that's the symptom of what's happening. The symptom is my husband is, like, I don't know what accounts that he owns. He might have $500,000 stashed somewhere and I don't even know about it. I don't know if I'm in the right, kind of going, yeah, barking up the right tree here. So that's the symptom that they have. That's the fear that they have. What they're longing for, what they're feeling, the problem that they're looking to have solved, the benefit is, how do I ensure that we have, how do I get transparency on what we own? Okay. I don't know, just wordsmithing this off the cuff, but.
No, that helps a lot.
Okay.
Adam?
Yeah.
That FAQ that you mentioned, is it in the library?
That's a good question. I don't know. Maybe. So the FAQ that we send out as part of our prospect process, I don't know. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
I can send it to Allison here. I've got my laptop over here. I can do it after.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. It's long. I think it's 7 or 8 pages. It's candidly, it's not real sexy. It's just a Word document on letterhead. It works.
And you send that when?
after the triage call and before the one-page plan presentation. That's kind of the seeding and the branding of like building even more of the credential, which candidly, I probably don't need as much as another advisor that doesn't have that brand recognition in the optometric space, but it's still narrowing down the message of, if you're considering or if you're working with another advisor, I want to very intentionally seed what we do really well that other advisors might not, and why you would consider hiring us as opposed to either sticking with your current advisor or hiring someone else. Yeah, it's a little time here. I can probably find it real quick. It's part of the, I know the email itself is a text expander that Kathy just types. By the way, we pulled a report last month on text expander. I think it's saved. I posted it in Tribe. I think our third, what was it? It was like 14 hours, I think. Yeah, I think it was 14 hours in a 30-day period that text expander saved Kathy. So that's why I love that piece of software. Let's see here. I can't find it right now. I know it's a template somewhere that Kathy has. I'll see if I, who has it? Isaac, yeah, I think. I'll see if I can find that and send it with the FAQs. Just kind of the language that's included in the email that we send out. It's like one line. I mean, it's nothing special. So.
The questions to ask other advisors.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, that I'll send out, and then the
yep. Okay.
The follow up on that was. On the back is the finished product that we eventually want you to get through. I know we're coming close to, what time are we done here, Allison? Okay. I didn't know if that was actually accurate or if we had to wrap up sooner than that-ish. Okay. This is the eventual goal that we want you to get to be at, where, again, back to what I said in the very beginning, we help blank to blank, blank, blank so that they can. Again, I've phrased it a little bit differently here. I have chosen to emphasize three key problems that we look to have solved: productively manage cash flow, taxes, invest prudently, so that they can live their best life on purpose. Variation on the theme of what we have here on the sheet. Question?
Okay, Adam from online. What are some examples of key outcomes 1, 2, and 3?
So I'm going to look for a ripcord to pull here and jettison the parachute, because this isn't, I don't know, candidly.
I think it's like at the end of your phrase, those three things that you promise you'll deliver.
Yeah, and I've just done it. I mean, as I think of the key outcome 1, 2, and 3, I've condensed all that down to just helping optometrists live life on purpose, live their best life on purpose. The key outcomes in our situation: proactively manage cash flow, reduce taxes, invest prudently. The antithesis of that, or the opposite of that, is to, kind of like Barbara, what you were saying, what are the pain points that we're looking to solve? What are the outcomes of the work that we're going to do here?
We have a sample of this filled out on the resources. Perfect. As well. You want to take a look at that? That might be helpful too.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
The ones that I came up with were organized, confident, in control. You know, when you're talking about helping people simplify and organize, plan for retirement, make work optional.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And another example.
Kind of like to what Barbara's saying as well. Going from, or was it Dan? Going from confused and overwhelmed to clear and confident. That's what our process is going to do. When you think of what we do as advisors, and this is the whole idea of why we have workflows and why everything is systematized, you're taking a client through a manufacturing process. That's what we're doing. We're taking a raw material in one door. You're putting it through, hopefully, a standardized process. The asterisks there are the art of the relationship, and that's candidly why we get paid to do what we do, because we're managing humans, which is not easy. But the process is still the same. We're taking a raw material in the door, we're putting it through a process, and we come out with a finished product, quote unquote, right? The product in this case that we want to encourage you to think of is not necessarily, again, this is what we always taught here at Limitless and what the profession is shifting to. It's not the product of the plan. It's about the action being taken by the client and the feeling and result that we're able to deliver because we're in their life. I had a coach that I worked with years ago, and he always said, it was something that really hung with me. He said, the value that I know the end part of this. He's like, the mark of a great advisor is not necessarily what we do for clients, but what clients are empowered to do because we're in their life. And so some of, like, if I were thinking this key outcome, one of the things that I've observed, and I haven't touched on this much, but it's just as I'm thinking about it, I'm curious if anybody else resonates with this. I have been surprised at how many times all the client needs is permission. I'm amazed at how many times the quote unquote advice that we give is just permission to do something. I mean, I can buy that $750,000 ski lodge. Yeah. Really? Yeah. I can. Really? Yeah. Yeah. Spend your money. It's your money, right? Yeah, exactly. Amen to that. And we've said that, like, your balance sheet doesn't change. You're just shifting it in elements. You're just shifting it from your equity risk over to your real estate term. Balance sheet's the same. Permission. So that, as we think about, kind of back to the question, as I admittedly go, I don't know what you're putting there. We have one filled out, but that's one of the outcomes that I could think of that I think would be pretty. I mean, as I said that, almost every single one of you shook your head. We help you feel good. Empowering you to make your, I don't know, I'm trying to wordsmith this on the fly here, but noodle on that, noodle on the permission. And to what extent you feel that is the work that you do. And I go back to what that advisor said, the mark of a great advisor is not necessarily what we do for clients, but what clients are empowered to do because we're in their life. And sometimes it's as simple as giving permission. Sometimes it's as complex as a stock option strategy and how to minimize the taxes and understand the tax, blah, 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 blah. And sometimes it's as simple as just giving permission. The common denominator, though, is all comes down to a feeling. I feel clear in not being surprised by a tax bill on April 15th. I feel clear about, yeah, I can't afford that $750,000 ski condo. Strategies are different, but the feeling is the same. As you think about all of this, try and put it through that filter of how you make your client feel, not necessarily what you do. As long as they feel thoroughly diagnosed, as long as they feel like you understand, you've heard them, you understand the problem, you've demonstrated that you have the quality and the competence to be able to solve that, that's what they're buying from you. Is that as cliche as it sounds, that peace of mind? So, questions? We good? Good. Isaac, go ahead.
You are really good about having these phrases that you put on in practice the law.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So the compliment was, I have a microphone too, but no. There we go.
This is quite the buildup. I'm a better
man. I know. It's like, all right, lay it on me. Lay it on. Right. Come on, shower
you've
me.
Got,
with...
You do a really good job with these different phrases that you have and that you've clearly practiced a bunch of times. I guess my question is around, like, what did it take to get there? You know, how many times do you practice these? How much do you iterate and evolve them? What does it look like to get to this polished level where you're just off the cuff, here's what we do for people?
It's interesting that you ask the iteration, because I sometimes, like, I have the imposter syndrome or inferior, like I always got to be improving. It's like,
right,
no, it's working.
I think that's my problem, is like just continuing to iterate, and you don't get to the place where it's as smooth, right? Because you're constantly changing it, and it's new every week.
For me, it really, it took, and this is the easy answer, but it's hard to hear in the sense that it just took a lot of reps and the benefit in doing the rep with the same type of client, as opposed to a generalist advisor that's going to hear different problems. A generalist advisor might hear from someone that works at Google, Airbnb, and then a school teacher, or maybe those are bad examples, but right, you're not as, the type of questions and the problems are so across the spectrum that it makes it difficult to hone those questions down really well. For me, it was practicing just with prospects. I mean, if I pulled a list of the last 12 months, I've done 84 triage calls. And so it's 84 times that I've been asking those four questions. What's the primary, you know, what's the primary financial concern that you're looking to have solved right now? Are you looking for a financial advisor, or are you determining whether you need one? How do you define success in the next 12 months? Like, those are maybe more generalists that would apply across the board. But I mean, if we did 84 in the last 12 months over the past 3 years, I've probably done well over 200 of them. So candidly, Limitless helps me practice. Coaching in here and having these conversations allows me to reaffirm that. I have rehearsed and stood in the office and done it myself. I've rehearsed it in front of Kathy. I know that might not be the exact answer other than, or that, like I said, it's not a good answer because there is no, it's just practice. And I don't know how to quantify that. Do it 50 times and then you'll be a master. I don't know. Says Malcolm Gladwell. I got really good at just understanding what their problems were. And that took the guesswork out of it. And I think that's what makes rehearsing a lot easier, because I don't have to guess, oh, do they want to hear this? Do they not? Which makes the reiteration not really a concern, because we keep hearing the same problems. And so as long as we keep hearing the same problems, I'm going to keep saying the same things, because that's ultimately what matters. And I think that's where so much of what we talk about here in Limitless, like I said, number one, making sure that you have that niche, is that ideal client target market, is really important. If that's 1A, 1B is ask and just survey. Call your clients. I can't tell you how many times over the past 4 years, as I openly admit to clients that we're building this airplane as we fly, the service model for ODs, what do you want us to do more of? What are we doing that isn't valuable to you? What would you like us to do? One of the things that we're trying to do in 2023 is figure out how do we do mastermind groups, because I talk to my ODs about the fact that I'm in a great mastermind group with Taylor and Roger and Peter, and like, we have a lot of fun. We get a lot of work done. And like, that sounds really cool. Hey, would you ever think about doing that for ODs? I'd love to get, like, put on a list. Like, ask your clients. They want to help you. They want you to be successful. You've already helped them.